This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. This podcast gives me the time to really talk to people about technology and issues, get past the PR and jargon, and into what stuff actually means. I try to help listeners understand why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but I travel a lot so sometimes I'll miss a week. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at ScreenFeed.com. I've yet to meet Jackie Walker in person, but in her chats over the phone and video, she's quickly impressed me with her knowledge, insights, and enthusiasm for digital signage. Many of the people I've dealt with at big media companies speak an unfamiliar, very buzz-phrasy language that I barely grasp. But Jackie works for one of the biggest, Publicis Sapient, and speaks like normal people. Based in Houston, she's the head of strategy for that giant agency's work in what's called dining and delivery. That puts her front and center in planning out and then executing things like digital menu displays and the overall ordering experience at major QSRs. Drive-thrus and their digital displays were a big part of how many QSRs got through COVID lockdown periods when in-store ordering was restricted. And now we're seeing a lot of operators who didn't have drive-thru adding that capability. Jackie and I had a great chat about the value proposition and ROI model for drive-thru display technology, including mashing up a lot of things like loyalty apps, readers, and other technologies to customize or optimize what customers see when they get in front of screens. If you sell into or service the QSR space, this is a valuable listen. Jackie, welcome. We've spoken in the past and know each other a bit. I don't think we've actually met in person, and who does that anymore?
Not yet.
You work for Publicis Sapient, and you've been leading strategy for digital menu boards for a couple of big QSR brands. What does all that entail?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Publicis Sapient, for those of your listeners who aren't super familiar with us, we are a digital business transformation firm. So we work with many brands, many QSRs in particular, around how they can use digital to really, you know, optimize the way that they are connecting with their customers. So it's on a lot of fronts. There's some, you know, mobile work, of course, loyalty work, customer relationship marketing, all of these are suspects. But I specifically have really been working very closely on digital menu boards, which has been really interesting. So the brands that I've been working with, and I've now worked with five of the top 25. So, and different categories, right? So, you know, a couple of the burger brands, a coffee brand, a chicken brand. What's really interesting, I think, for these larger brands is that they're really trying to push the envelope on what they're trying to achieve with their digital menu boards, but nobody has really figured out how to do that yet. So when we go in these strategy engagements, we're really focused on the customer experience as a lens. So the team is generally, you know, myself, a couple strategists, a product manager sometimes, and, you know, a couple of UX people, so visual designers and user experience folks who can really think about the way you organize an experience for a customer to make it super easy. And we really look at, you know, kind of three lenses, right? We look at where the brand is from a brand identity customer experience perspective. So as they think about how to transition from just translating a print menu, which is generally the way that this starts, right? How do you
Right.
Translating a print menu to actually thinking about, you know, broader digital capabilities. So we try to understand kind of where they are with that. What's their mobile experience like? You know, how do they think about this on their digital channels today?
Mm-hmm.
We think about where they are from a technology standpoint. So that's really kind of interesting work, right? Talking to their restaurant technology groups, sometimes their customer technology groups, trying to understand what they're doing from a loyalty standpoint, where they are with point of sale capability, where they are with their digital menu board vendor, if they're already down a path. So what are the capabilities they have and what do they don't have? And really kind of thinking about, you know, those lenses so that we can get to a view on where they go from a user experience standpoint, and then also, you know, how do they continue to push the envelope as they build in more and more digital capabilities?
Mm-hmm. So you talked about pushing the envelopes. When digital menu boards first started being applied in larger QSR chains, it was all around the operational issues that, you know, changes could be made a lot more efficiently and you can do day parting. I gather what you're saying is the larger brands are at least in their heads way beyond that now.
Yeah, it's a funny thing, right? I think we're still talking about some of those basics. You know, everybody thinks about McDonald's as kind of the gold standard, which makes sense. They're the largest. They were the first to scale outdoor, but that's recent, right? So they just finished their rollout in the U.S. in the beginning of 2020. So it's not actually that long ago that some of this hardware was being installed. So I think day parting is still something that brands are very much thinking about. They're thinking about how to leverage day parting. So if you look at the McDonald's menu, you know, there are some obvious changes with the day parts. You know, you look at the background color, for example, breakfast is blue, lunch is yellow, dinner and late night are black, right? That's kind of the most obvious. But if you squint, you can't really tell the difference between the products that are laid out for lunch, dinner, and late night. They're doing very, very subtle things with reorganizing product, but they're not really leaning into that capability yet.
Right.
So as brands are starting to think about departing, thinking more about, you know, what can you do from a business perspective with that? Can you do promotions that are specific to a time of day, right? Can you have a special late night menu that has, you know, different pricing on some of your most snackable items, as an example? Do you play with brand voice, right? So some of these QSR brands have really quite playful brand identities. You know, you think about some of these brands could have a really fun and differentiated late night experience versus what they're trying to accomplish during lunchtime. That would be consistent with their brand. So still thinking about that. Now the big thing is loyalty. And so with loyalty, and I keep kind of beating the drum on this one, that is really going to fundamentally change the drive-through experience. Again, McDonald's pushing the envelope here. They completed their national loyalty rollout in July in the U.S., which is their largest market. And what's kind of sneaky, and I don't know if everyone's fully recognized it, is that now in the McDonald's app, you can actually set it up so that when you go through the drive-through, you can pay with your stored credit card via your app. So you go to the window, just like, you know, you go up to the menu board, just like you normally would. You talk to the crew member, you place your order, you give them this code, and now it's applying loyalty points. It's using any, you know, coupons or offers or points redemptions that you've applied. But it also does the payment through that mobile interface, which is really interesting, right? It's subtle. But if you think about the experience of a customer, they don't have to go to the pay window anymore at all, right?
Right.
You just really streamline that. You don't have to hand your credit card out through the window. you avoid all of that kind of silliness. So I think that's a really, really interesting change. And I think other brands are really going to be forced to emulate that. And that's going to be a huge shift.
Yeah. And that's part of it, right? That if you have a lot of active use of your loyalty app that also blends payment in there, when they get into the drive-through lane long before they even get to the pre-sale window, a system like what McDonald's bought with that Israeli company Dynamic Yield is that they can pick that stuff up, right? They know that Jackie's back and she's got her kids with her, maybe, or whatever. And they can, when you get to the pre-sale and when you get to the order window, they can dynamically recast that menu to kind of suit your preferences or what they think might be your preferences and how they can upsell you on stuff, right?
That's where it's headed. Yeah. So no one is really doing that particularly effectively yet, but that is absolutely where it's headed. So, you know, the challenge that a lot of these brands are working on still is customer identification. And we've been talking about that for so long, right? We used to talk about license plate recognition, still talk about Bluetooth. How do you figure out who's in the car? Are you creepy and use cameras? You know, what are you doing? So brands are really still kind of experimenting and figuring out what is the best tech for that. So, you know, McDonald's right now is just doing a short code. So the customer still has to do some work, right? They have to open their app. They have to see that code. They read it to the crew member.
Right.
Code is different every time. So you have to actually look to see, you know, in that transaction what your code is. But certainly been testing Bluetooth. Dunkin' is kind of interesting. Dunkin's been partnering with a company called Blue Dot, not so secretly, which does pretty advanced geolocation. So they're actually using really, really tight geofencing to trigger, you know, customer identification and doing some customer greeting based on that.
So you would actually say, hi, Dave, or hey, Jackie?
Exactly. Oh, which, okay. Which is, I think, still a questionable use case, right? Like,
yeah.
You know,
you start looking at your rearview mirror and going, okay, who's following me?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My favorite actually is not the hi, Dave, at the beginning, but it's the thanks, Dave, at the end of the transaction. You know, like that's been the topic, is how do you personalize that screen at the very end of the order confirmation? Which is funny, because if you actually sit in a drive through for a while and watch, which I do, it's part of my job as a, you know, the digital menu board super nerd. You realize
that strange woman standing in the parking lot.
Oh God, Dave, I have so many funny stories. My husband always makes fun of me. It's like, excuse me, there's a suspicious woman in leggings at a Volvo in the drive-thru. It's funny. But you realize that most customers have already driven away by the time that thank you sign, you know, presents, right? So they're not seeing that. So if you're investing a bunch of time and energy figuring out how you're personalizing that screen, all you're really doing is creeping everybody out, because you're showing the next customer in line the previous customer's information.
Right.
But, you know, that's kind of an interesting thing. And then the Tim Hortons is playing with scanners. So actually installing QR scanning hardware in the drive-through lane. You know, customer opens their app, has the QR code open, and scans on the scanner, which I'm, you know, intrigued to see how that's going to go. I think there are definitely some pretty strong cons with that, in terms of that hardware investment is not going to be small. And then, you know, we've all done grocery checkout, right? Self-checkout, and you try to scan something, even in good lighting, that can be quite challenging. So now you have a mobile phone trying to scan in direct sun. I'm predicting there will be some challenges with that.
Yeah, in Canada with snow and minus 30 and everything else.
Yep. Sticking your hand out the phone with a big mitten on.
Yeah. Yeah, Edmonton in February doing that. I'm not sure there's going to be a big take up, but you never know.
Yeah. So I think, you know, brands are, to go back to the original question, you know, what are they doing? There's still a little bit of basics, right? Let's figure out how we're going to identify the customer. Let's build that foundation. Let's really think about how we're going to use day parting more effectively, really get the promise of that. Suggestive selling is another area that's quite interesting. So we've been using those examples in the industry for 10 years, right? Show ice cream when it's hot out and show hot coffee when it's cold out. But now the technology is definitely there to do much more sophisticated things. That's where things like McDonald's Dynamic Yield do come into play in a big way, is making some suggestions for customers that go well beyond what you could do with rules-based recommendations. And then now it's like, let's start using our imagination and getting creative. What does personalization look like? If you know a customer, you know, do you make it really easy to reorder recent items? That's a great benefit for both the operator and the customer, right? So if you show somebody buys their Whopper Jr., mine is, you know, no pickle, no mayo with cheese. If you know that I order that every single time, you show that on the board and you say, you know, just say, I want my Whopper Jr. my way. And there's a POS integration for the crew member to hit one button. You just saved a bunch of time, right? And really provided some additional value for the customer. So I think types of executions are going to be really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly in places like Canada, where you have pretty substantial number of
commuters who would go into a Tim Hortons every morning, and they're going to order their double-double or whatever it is, and they're not going to move off of that because that's what gets them on the road.
Yeah.
To be able to just know that, okay, Dave's here and he's getting his double-double, and it's, you know, there's nothing involved other than payment, or maybe even not that if you flash your phone the right way.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really powerful. And it's those moments, I think, that are going to be the most interesting are where there's clear value to the customer and there's clear value to the operator, right? Everyone benefits from that kind of investment. Hey, dude, yeah, not so much, right?
Is that seamlessness a big part of it, where it just the different systems and it all just kind of works and it makes your drive-through experience better?
That is, I think, the kind of gold standard, and that's where it's headed. I think it's really interesting, you know, for a long time, brands were buying digital menu boards, and it was really, they're buying a piece of hardware, especially outdoor, because everybody's really terrified about making this big hardware investment. You really focus on the hardware, and then you get some software along for the ride, and you sort of hope that the software has the out-of-box capabilities that you need to do what you want to do with it. I think now more and more and more brands are recognizing that that's not really how it's going to work for them, right? It's really about creating this customized experience that can integrate with their systems. It can integrate with their point of sale. It can integrate with their loyalty program. It can integrate with their master product data. Like, these are really powerful benefits to an integrated system that is, you know, software first and experience first, and the hardware is just supporting it.
I'm curious with drive-through right now, because of COVID. Prior to COVID, the idea of selling drive-through was it could do all these things for you. Here's the value proposition, and so on, and it was being marketed that way. With COVID and the inability, at least in some jurisdictions, to even go inside and dine and order stuff, if you didn't have drive-through, you were in a world of pain in terms of operating your business. Has that kind of deferred the whole idea, if you could do all these things with it, and just made it operational, that for the moment, or at least in the past year, we needed to put in drive-through just so we could do transactions and sell food?
Yeah, I think that was a huge benefit for QSR, right? You kind of think about drive-through was, you know, pre-built for COVID. It's the ultimate kind of contactless, almost kind of service method. So I think quick serve had a huge advantage to other types of restaurants. And, you know, even think about fast casual, where some of them maybe had drive-through or curbside pickup, but that was a very small part of their business.
Yeah.
Whereas quick service has been trying to optimize drive-through for years and years and years, and spend a lot of time and energy and money investing in ways to make that channel more seamless. I think what's different now and exciting is that, you know, the emphasis for a long time has been on the operational aspects of drive-through. So how do you improve speed of service, and how do you improve order accuracy? And those are kind of the two big things. And how do you drive throughput, right? Now there's this question, and I think loyalty is a big part of the impetus for that. How do you create a meaningful customer interaction? So not only how are you getting the customer the food they want, you know, at the speed you want to get it to them and they want it to go, but how do you actually provide some additional value in that interaction and provide a differentiated experience, which is exciting.
And what might that work and look?
Yeah, so I think one of the things that's different about quick service restaurants is that they still have a very large portion of their customers that are cash customers, right? Mm-hmm. You think about Starbucks, they've been extraordinarily successful at getting a ton of customers to just use mobile order pay. And it's easy peasy. And then the challenge from an operations standpoint is just how do you get those mobile order customers served quickly? QSRs are going to have a steeper hill to climb with that. They're trying to drive digital adoption. They're trying to drive known customer rates. Like, what percentage of their customers do they actually know that are registered customers or credit cards that they can attribute to a customer? But that behavior of, you know, people are going to start mobile ordering everything. So far, there's not really any evidence that that's going to be consistent. Customers like deals and offers, that provides a lot of value. But if there's a way that you can hook into deals and offers without the customer actually having to complete the transaction in the mobile app, that's really powerful, right? Drive-through is all about impulse. It's, you know, I can just pull in and grab my thing and go, and I don't have to think about it. I don't have to sit there and go through the 15 steps in a mobile app to order. So I think it's really going to be that balance between bringing forward that enhanced digital capability with loyalty, which includes, you know, reordering, it includes personalized offers, it includes all of those things, right? And bringing that to bear in the drive-through lane itself. And the menu board becomes a very, very powerful tool in reinforcing those value adds. If your customer is asking questions in the drive-thru, you're in big trouble, right? So if you have a loyalty customer, they don't know that you've registered them, or, you know that it's them that's there, or they can't tell that you applied their points the way that they thought the points were going to get applied to get a free ice cream cone, you really create some significant operational challenges. So menu boards, I think, are more and more becoming a tool to be able to reinforce to customers that you've got their back and things are going to be accurate in the way that they expect them to be. That's super powerful.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
Is there an easily defined, easily sold, and easily acknowledged ROI model now for these drive-through displays? Because by and large, they are being put in by the local franchise owner, not head office, so that there's a significant, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 infrastructure investment to do this, and local operators are kind of looking at this, going, "Well, I didn't save for that, or why would I do this? What am I going to see out of it?"
Yeah, I will say that there does seem to be a pretty big sea change with regard to the franchisee's state of mind when it comes to this investment. Mm-hmm. I think there's real acceptance, and I've worked with a couple brands now where, you know, the initiative is spearheaded at the brand level, right? That there's much more power when it comes from the brand, and that capability is built centrally. The franchisees are just, footing the bill for installation in their individual restaurant or, set of restaurants. But the franchisees are basically saying, let's go faster. You know, how fast can I get this thing installed? And they can't go as fast as the franchisees want them to go. I think what's interesting with the ROI model, in early days, and the math worked better for indoor because the capital investment with indoor is a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of the cost savings of printing and, having people up on ladders and the liability that goes along with that, the inflexibility of print. You could make a pretty good case for the return on investment with those indoor boards on cost alone. With drive-through, your capital invest is quite a bit higher because the hardware has to be much more rugged to be able to withstand that outdoor environment. I think what is shifting is now the value prop is not just about the cost savings and the increased flexibility, but it's also about direct upside. So now that you have these additional digital capabilities, how do you actually bill the customer's check by adding capabilities that are unique to digital? So getting really strong with the way you're using day parting, or really thinking about suggestive sell and how do you how do you do that in a consistent way, which is really driving check? How do you encourage customers toward your more premium menu items, right? And you can get quite sophisticated in the way that you use that channel to build check.
Is there an acknowledged metric around that? So pulling this out of my head, if you make this investment, it should pay for itself in the first 18 months or the first 26 months or whatever it is.
Yeah, the economics depend a little bit on the restaurant, but sure. Generally the kind of rule of thumb has been you're going to get like a 3-5% lift just by moving from analog boards to digital, because the customer experience is just much better. Mm-hmm. I think the challenge is that wears off eventually as your customers get used to digital. You don't have that, you know, Disney effect on the third visit, fourth visit, fifth visit. But over time, it's all about driving that incrementality. And the numbers are hard there, Dave, because a lot of people don't want to share. The brands don't want to share how successful or not successful their suggestive sell capabilities are. But generally speaking, it's all about driving that ticket over time. And then you can do the work back on the break-even time. Right. But I think in general, what you said, 18 to 24 months is in most cases probably about right.
Okay. And I'm sure, as in many things, the other QSR operators, regardless of category or size, pay very close attention to what the giants do, like a McDonald's. And if they're doing a full rollout across their whole estate, across the United States, they're not doing that for giggles. Like they've thought this through.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, with the ROI model, part of it is, you know, what is the direct benefit, you know, from an economic standpoint, but then the other part of it is a very much keeping up with the Joneses kind of mentality or keeping up with McDonald's in this case.
The Ronalds.
Right? How do you actually ensure that, you know, you're meeting customer expectations? Because once customers get used to that slick experience, you know, you pull into a random Taco Bell with 10-year-old backlets that, you know, half of them are blown out and they're all scratched up and dingy. You know, customers do notice that stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there is a little bit of just a leveling up that guest experience, and it is going to be contagious, right? All the big brands are really starting to think about how they do this. And I think now with the price of hardware coming down and the big players converting, so McDonald's is already there, you know, RBI is rolling out across Burger King, Popeyes, and Tim Hortons. They're going to be the next big player to reach scale. It's really just a matter of when and not if everyone's going to go digital on these drive-through.
Right. So let's talk about inside the store. I mean, we talked mostly about drive-through displays, but inside the store, digital menu boards have been around a lot longer, but they're changing too, because you're going to see a lot more self-service ordering and a lot more pickup. And you need digital menu boards that have to kind of also function as queue management or notification, right?
Yeah. So I think what's happening is there's actually kind of a proliferation of use cases, if you want to think about it that way, right? So the menu board, digital menu board at front counter, is really just about providing a menu to customers that are in the restaurant. And you're right, it's pretty well understood. I think what's interesting, when I talk to customers about drive-through, they get really excited about personalization. And the word I always push to use is optimization, even more than personalization, because you get the benefit for unknown guests as much.
And it doesn't freak people out.
Exactly. But once you get that working like a well-oiled machine, you start to understand customer behavior at the store level, you can actually apply those same principles at front counter, right? So you're not you're not targeting your messaging to an individual customer, because that front counter board is meant to be a one-to-many experience, but you can 100% tailor that experience to the restaurant. So you can curate the menu for the types of purchase behavior that exists in that store or that type of store. So So I think front counter is going to continue to evolve, you know, with regards to that, to becoming a little bit more curated, benefiting from the investment at drive-through. Kiosk is the other huge piece. So, you know, I laugh. I think we've talked about this before. When COVID started, everyone thought, oh my God, it's like the death of kiosks. Nobody is ever going to touch a touch screen ever again.
Yeah.
But actually it's done quite the opposite of, as we've understood better, that face-to-face is much worse than touching a screen and using some hand sanitizer. But what's interesting is that from a rollout perspective, brands still think about kiosk as very, very different from menu boards, which I find kind of fascinating, right? You have kind of the way that it ends up shaking out is, you know, brands think about their mobile experience, and most brands are furthest along on mobile ordering. Then when they think about kiosk, it's like, well, it's the app, but on a big screen, right? And a lot of brands actually manage it that way. So it's not the in-store tech groups that are managing that kiosk. It's actually the digital groups, the customer experience technology groups that are delivering them. And then you have the menu boards, and they are very much firmly still in the restaurant technology side of the house. So they're a different problem to solve altogether. I think more and more, there's going to be a little bit of consolidation across that. So, you know, I always encourage customers to think about, as you're doing drive-through, you're building these mechanisms from a back-end standpoint to actually deliver curated content and be smart in how you're merchandising product dynamically. It's absolutely a play for that on front counter boards and a play for that on kiosks. And the kiosk is, after all, another piece of in-store hardware, right? And then to your point, Dave, there are these other use cases, right? So our brand's going to start to put more queue management screens up, like McDonald's has, where they have, you know, now serving these customer numbers, and they have the list for in-store and list for mobile. Do they start to do some things with digital displays near pickup areas as more and more customers are starting to use kind of takeout options? I've even heard some thought around, are there going to be digital screens at mobile pickup, which I'm still not sold on that one, right? Like a sign made out of metal does just great for, you know, telling a customer where they need to park.
Pick up here, yeah.
We'll see who's able to first define like the use case that has a clear ROI for putting screens at those parking spots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The
last thing I wanted to ask about was some fundamentals around digital menu boards. One of the things that I've found through the years, and seems to be getting better as people learn, is you have these eye charts that they try to ram so much stuff into a single display that you really can't read anything, and it's mentally overwhelming. Like you look at it and go, oh my God, I'll just order the thing that I've got in my head and get the hell out of here. Is that sort of thing important? Are color choices important? Font choices? Certainly the volume of text or size or point size?
Yeah,
all those things.
100% yes. And I think I'm glad you asked this question because this is my favorite question, right? If you look at how most of the brands, McDonald's is a good example, Burger King is a good example, you know, it looks like the problem they've been trying to solve is how do you jam all the shit that you had on 6 panels, you know, print now onto 2 or 3 digital screens. Like that, if you just look at it, you can see that's what they thought they were trying to do. Really, the opportunity with digital menu boards is to get more precise about what the content is, because you can have advanced analytics. You can link what you display to a customer to transaction. You can start to have a much better data-driven merchandising strategy. So you can really think about the use case for drive-through, which to your point is you have a customer that's freaked out. They're going to be in front of that board for, you know, probably 10 to 15 seconds looking at it at a peak time before they start talking or the crew member starts talking to them. So if you're trying to show them, you know, 85 SKUs, there is no way that any human is understanding 85 SKUs in 10 to 15 seconds.
Yeah.
So the opportunity is really about curation. And I think when we approach menu board design, we don't think about it from kind of an old school menu science print menu point of view. We think about it from a digital frame of reference, which is how do you guide wayfinding for a customer? How do you establish a kind of system design and a foundation that's going to allow the operator, the brand to substitute products in and out and see how they perform when they're in these different slots? You don't think about designing a poster. You think about designing a digital framework. So absolutely, yes. I think curation is key. That to me is really all of these personalization tactics that we talk about. It really comes back to how do I show less stuff that's more meaningful? And tactics are all different ways of getting at that problem. So I think that's what's most exciting about the move to digital menu boards is we can start playing there. And as an industry, get much smarter about how do you actually serve the customer in that moment? How do you show them the least amount of information to get them move successfully, either help them get what they wanted to get, they knew they wanted, or inspire them to try something new, build ticket, improve their level of confidence? These are all the things that become kind of front and center in this new digital menu board experience.
Hmm. All right. Super, super interesting. I appreciate you taking the time with me.
A lot of fun, Dave, always. Looking forward to talking to you soon and maybe meeting you in person.
Yes, if we ever travel once again and do things like trade shows.
Amen. Thanks so much, Dave.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 16.9, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the site and find scores of conversations with smart industry folks. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 16.9. That's at 16-9.net. You'll find thousands of posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. I don't run a press release republishing mill. If something makes it on 16.9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16.9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and one of those is podcast sponsor ScreenFeed. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 16.9 is a product of Vertical Media Consulting Group, the massive media empire I run out of a spare room in my house, now located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.